Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, of all the events, and there's just a ton of them, rowing and fencing, I think if I was asked, would you like to be the commentator for one of the events, which would you choose? I'm off to French Polynesia and Tahiti for the surfing contest.
Surfing? How long has surfing been an Olympic sport?
I want to say 2016, but it's just amazing. I don't know how they even can judge them. They all look great.
So is that the closest French territory that has surf to surf on?
Yeah, probably. Apparently. There, Tahiti has some on the main island. There's some really great surfing places. But anyway, we're off and running here. I'm sure the Olympics will continue for, I don't know, probably 10 more days at least. I think it's a two-week deal. So anyway, we're beginning our 15th year on the radio with our radio show in January of 2025. We're off and running on Thursday, the first day of August already. Hard to believe, August 2024, coming to you from the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. They have the naming rights to the show here, and I'm glad they do, my friends Jan and Jack. We're part of the Bustos Media, growing presence in Tucson, five radio stations under one roof. This one's KVOI. The Voice, we've got our worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from KVOI.com. Also, we have all of our podcasts from our program dating back to January of 2011. When we do our telephone interviews, and we have a telephone interview at the beginning of the program today, that's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The longest-serving member of the Pima County Board of Supervisors is now Republican, the lone Republican on the five-member Board of Supervisors. That is Steve Christie, Republican representing District Number 4. Mr. Christie, Supervisor Christie, is standing for a third four-year term on the Pima County Board of Supervisors, and he will be facing off Democrat Vanessa Bechtel. He'll face off against Vanessa in November. But let's now join Supervisor Christie. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Bill, and I appreciate being on your show, as always.
Well, thank you very much. Mount Lemmon, we always like to get an update from you because you're in close contact with our friends up on Mount Lemmon, because that is part of the supervisorial district number 4. How are they doing in rainfall? The mountains look incredibly green right now.
Well, there's good reason for that. during this monsoon season, the Mount Lemmon area has received over 8.5 inches of rain.
Wow.
The springs are running, the tanks are full. So things are looking just terrific with the rainfall and the hydration up there. It's so important, and we're so grateful. Also, you know, there's a lot of things going on this time of year, as usual, up in Mount Lemmon, which we always say is Pima County's favorite playground, as it is for the entire world. We get worldwide travelers that go up to our Sky Islands there, and they grow to love the Catalina Mountains and the Summer Haven community as much as we do. And one of the great things that just happened a few weeks ago, it was the one-year anniversary of the Mount Lemmon Lodge opening.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, we need to give our congratulations to Diane and John Osborne for their brainchild of love. They've had this project brewing for many years, and it's come to fruition, and now it's celebrating its first year, and it's just a wonderful anchor for the community, and it really conveys to the world and to the Summer Haven enterprises there that Summer Haven is back to stay, even though they've had to suffer some pretty horrific issues over the last couple of decades. But now the Mount Lemmon Lodge is built and been open for a year, and it really sends a message that things are happening up in Summer Haven. Also, one of the issues that we always kind of champion and want to always be remindful to the community, particularly any other communities that want to join in. And that's the Mount Lemmon Firewise team. Now, these Firewise programs are designed to help communities become obviously Firewise and proactive in preventing fires from starting with their property cleanups. And they have to go through a very rigorous set of rules and regulations and projects in order to qualify. And the Mount Lemmon Firewise team has been active throughout the summer and is really a model for numerous other Firewise communities that have opened up in our district. And we're proud that we've been leading that and using the Mount Lemmon community as an example. Also, if there are any communities or HOAs or neighborhoods that want to involve themselves in the Firewising project, they can please call our office at 724-8094, and we will gladly connect you with the folks who've been doing it for almost 20 years now.
Well, it's important because the insurance companies are really taking a hard look at places like Tucson, like Mount Lemmon, and they're saying, why should we insure these places? These are really high-risk areas. So anything that shows that you're taking the extra step to be fire-wise is going to pay off for you in the end, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's obviously a very intricate point and impactful one on this whole Firewise issue, because when you are experiencing difficulties obtaining homeowners insurance, as the Mount Lemmon community is and other communities, not only in our district, but in our state and in our country, the insurance companies need to have some kind of a justification to provide insurance and to keep your rates from rising so dramatically. And this is what the Firewise program helps do. So we're very grateful that the insurance industry, who we've met with in the state with the Department of Insurance Director, is taking notice of this Firewise issue and sending them on to all insurance companies that our communities that are with the Firewise program are doing their level best to keep costs down and potential risks down, which, of course, is what insurance is all about.
The heat ordinance would make it so employers would have to have a plan for their employees during the heat of the summer. That proposal is now before the public. This is people are able now to make comments on it. You're not all on board on this one, are you?
Well, no, and I want to take your lead with your terrific op-ed that you submitted to the Green Valley News several weeks ago about dealing with the loss of your spouse of over 50 years. I've submitted one on this very subject, too, and it's in there in the recent edition with this heat ordinance. I'm not, because obviously in my life as a lifetime Pima County resident and Tucsonan and having businesses and raised a family here, I know what heat can do and what heat is all about. But nonetheless, it is something that we should be used to at this point. After all, it is Southern Arizona in summertime. And it seems like there's been a weaponization of heat in Pima County as well as in other areas of the country. I read numerous newspapers every day, and I swear daily edition, there's half a dozen articles on heat-related items, everything from deaths to fires to all sorts of negative things that deal with heat, which we're familiar with and we know that exists. But what happens is it starts in Pima County with Pima County administration, with the backing of the board's majority, instituting and enacting a set of rules and regulations for Pima County employees as far as how they're going to be treated and how they're going to react to heat situations while they're working. Now, in the last resolution, they said that there's extreme heat, kind of a benchmark level of 90 degrees for 5 days. Hell, that's a cooling trend in in our summers here. So this is an example. They're going to institute this with Pima County employees. Once that's in place, then they're going to take any kind of suppliers or folks that want to do business with Pima County on any levels through procurement, they're going to require these businesses, if they're going to do business with Pima County, they're going to have to accept the same type of heat regulations and extreme heat systems that the county is instituting. And I predict that once that's in place, the Pima County administration, through the health department, will insist that all private businesses in Pima County will institute heat regulations for workers, and they'll have all kinds of sanctions that go with them. Anything, I predict, again, from a higher hourly rate to those employees that have to work in the heat, or some sort of mandates that prevents workers from working certain times. I can just see the ramifications of this, of dealing with delayed projects, with a lot of extra expense to pay for these situations of extreme heat, and it's going to be passed on to the consumer. So I look at this quite blatantly as a COVID 2.0, the mandates that they instituted through Pima County during the COVID situation are the same type of focus and the same type of process that I think is going to happen with these heat regulations that are being forwarded very quickly, which also is troubling, very quickly in Pima County. And now there is a public hearing or comment period. And if you want to contact our office again at 724-8094, we can direct them to where those comments should be sent. But it is troubling that we have a whole slew of unelected bureaucratic officials in Pima County dictating to businesses how they should treat their employees and how to deal with their employees with what is basically a common occurrence every year in Pima County, hot temperatures. And these folks that are instituting and enacting these regulations on businesses have never owned a business, have never met a payroll, have never signed the front side of a check. It's not fair and it's not right. And I'm hoping that those who are going to be affected will let the county know that we don't need any heat regulations, because in this labor shortage that's happening across the country in general and in Pima County in particular, employers are going to treat their employees well and make sure they're protected from heat just as they have been for years. I worked on a car dealership, my family's, and I had to get in and out of cars as a lot boy in the middle of summer, and these cars have been sitting in the sun baking for hours. I know what it's like to work in the heat, so I survived that. I know many, many other businesses have to deal with it. We're experienced in this, and we don't need local governments or the federal government coming in and dictating or mandating to businesses how they should handle their employees when it gets hot.
All right, we're going to have to take a break, but it is basically just a plan that the employers have to have, but you're worried that this will quickly become an overreach and there'll be some more regulations.
Sanctions. Yeah. More sanctions if they're not complied, like fines or, who knows, even shutting down businesses.
Okay, we will take a break right here. Steve Christie, Pima County Supervisor, with us on the Buckmaster Show. He represents the 4th Supervisorial District. More with Steve Christie. Buckmaster continues. By the way, tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview, the Attorney General for Arizona, Chris Mays, will be our guest right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Steve Christie, Pima County Supervisor, with us on the live line. And Supervisor Christie at one point was the representative for the Arizona Department of Transportation for Pima County. That position is now held by General Ted Maxwell, who is the head of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. It's interesting. I looked at an old email from the Regional Transportation Authority, the RTA Next program, dated September 5th, 2023, almost 11 months ago, about a year ago. And I was looking at the timetable, Supervisor Christie, and we're behind the curve here on this thing if there's going to be an election in May of 2025.
Well, yes, we are. And quite frankly, that behind the curve, which you're referring to, I place squarely on the front doorstep of the city of Tucson for their constant bickering over pretty minute items and insisting that they're not getting any equity in the program and in the RTA, which is not an accurate surmisal of the whole program. They've been the beneficiaries over the last almost 20 years of some terrific projects. I think 46% of all the countywide projects, of all the regional projects, have gone to the city of Tucson. And yet they are, I think, in making the biggest infraction on the whole program, and that's trying to change the whole thrust and direction of the RTA, which was sold to the public back in 2006 as something that would not be changed, and that once the RTA was approved, that plan, that there would be no changes made. And now it seems that every meeting, the city of Tucson is trying to do exactly that, change the original plan, which I think undermines trust and faith in the RTA from the public, because the public was told that once the plan was approved, it would not and it could not be changed. And now the city of Tucson is continually trying to change it, trying to massage it to meet what they want to do with their agenda of downsizing streets, adding more bike lanes, bus lanes, and all sorts of transit issues that really don't affect what the core mission of the original RTA was, which is to move traffic from point A to point B. And until the city of Tucson realizes that the region is utilizing the city of Tucson just as much as Tucsonans are, and that we all have a stake in this whole issue, they're going to undermine the whole process, delay it. And I'm surprised. Well, I'm not surprised, but I think it, as we approach the deadline, they're going to use that as a bargaining chip and saying, you know, we've only got 3 months, 2 months, a few weeks to the deadline for the renewal. And we're still thinking of pulling out, and I think they will eventually pull out.
Mayor Honey of Marana was on the show. By the way, happy birthday, Mayor. I think your birthday was just a couple of days ago. He says there's now just a 50-50 shot at getting this done. And what I'm hearing you say, and I kind of tend to agree with you, that what we're seeing from the city now is just a stall tactic.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's like, you know, playing chess or poker or anything else. They're trying to go to the eyeball to eyeball to see who's the first one to wink. And I think in the past, out of good faith and a real sincere effort to try to keep everybody on board, especially the city of Tucson, individuals on the council, usually a mayor or even our own representative from Pima County, they've tried to accommodate a lot of the city of Tucson's concerns, which really equate to them blinking first. And, of course, the city of Tucson is a major player in all of this, obviously. But one of the things that they keep pushing for and demanding is that RTA money that is brought together by all of the regional jurisdictions together, everybody's participating in this. They want that money to maintain City of Tucson roads. They want to make sure that whatever's coming up in RTA 2, that it includes maintaining City of Tucson roads. They just passed a tax, 5% tax, and renewed it for the sole specific option and the sole specific focus of maintaining their roads. This is what that tax that they passed for Tucson residents to go for. Now they want not only that tax, they want to take any kind of new revenues that come in from the new RTA and dedicate it to repairing the city of Tucson's roads, which is their responsibility. And that was made perfectly clear in 2006, the city of Tucson signed on to that, and now they're looking at this as some sort of a cash cow, and also by playing chicken that, hey, this is neat. We can put the rest of the council, all of the jurisdictions, all of unincorporated Pima County up against the wall and insist that they all pay for the city of Tucson's maintenance. And that's a travesty of the whole program. It's not fair. It's not right. And it's going to create a lot of problems if the city of Tucson continues in this vein. They're playing chicken.
Real quickly, the problem here is that many of the groups that come and look at Tucson to expand or maybe relocate, they're going to see that this area is not welcoming to regionalism. Do you see that as an issue?
I see that as a very grave issue and a very accurate one that you've just conveyed. I also see that businesses that are looking at relocating or to moving into our area also look at the form of government and what it's trying what its end result is. And I've been told by regional economic developers, either through government entities or other kind of of folks that are trying to attract new business into Tucson, invariably the biggest hurdle that they have to face is from these businesses who are looking to relocate possibly to Tucson, among other places, is, you know, we look at Tucson, it's a great community, has a university, has some major industries, beautiful weather, beautiful resorts. There are all kinds of activities that are really important to our employees, but the government is obviously anti-business, and that is heard over and over again. And quite frankly, if I was in charge of a major corporation's relocation, and I had the inside track like I do as a county supervisor about the philosophy that my colleagues feel about economic development and bringing business into our community, I wouldn't come here either.
Okay. All right, Steve Christie, we will let you go, and thanks for joining us.
Well, before you do, Bill, I don't know if I've told you this before, but I love being supervisor.
I believe it. All right. Have a great afternoon, Steve.
Thank you. Same to you, Bill.
All right. Midway point of the Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show. It's August 1st. Speak with Don Luce. So much going on with these initiatives and the court actions against a couple of them right after we continue with a mid-show break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. Some folks got hammered, especially up on the northwest side from the hail. A couple of hail storms. So that means replenish time over at Green Things. They will certainly take care of you. Not only do they point you in the right direction, their knowledgeable staff walks you to the particular area on their 13-acre site where you will get the colorful and hopefully hardy plants to put in replacement plants in your garden. GreenThingsAZ.com, SisterBusinessOkoloVillage.com, all that great Talavera Vera pottery, wonderful pottery from all over the world. They're open daily in their 53rd year of business. When we do our telephone interviews, the live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Right now we are live in studio with his monthly visit. Always good to have attorney Don Luce with us from the Luce Law Group with offices in Tucson. They've got a beautiful office in Tucson and up in the Valley of the Sun. Mr. Luce, the Buckmaster Show legal contributor, author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. They're so popular that they're in their second printing. Hey, Don, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. Happy August.
Yeah, here we go into the month of August. There is so much going on. The legal implications of some of these measures, initiatives that voters will be maybe taking a look at on the ballot. We'll see what the courts say. But there's so much that I asked you to extend your usual 10-minute segment. We're going to do a couple of 10-minute segments. Why don't we begin with this Arizona Legislative Council, which they're supposed to take a look, right? A hard look at all of the initiatives and the propositions about the wording, correct?
Right. The Legislative Council, which, by the way, is Republican-controlled, is charged with creating descriptions for the various ballot measures. So, for instance, if something concerns sales tax, then the Legislative Council writes a description summarizing what the measure is all about.
Right.
Because the measure could be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of words, and it's helpful to have an impartial description as to what you're being asked to vote upon.
Hopefully impartial.
Well, yeah. And this is where it gets problematic, because there are certain terms or buzzwords that evoke certain biases or images in the minds of voters. And so when those words or phrases appear in a Legislative Council description, the people who don't want those words or phrases then go to court and ask judges to require that the description be changed, because at the end of the day, the description is supposed to be impartial.
Right.
So a good example of this is a case that was recently heard in Maricopa County involving Prop 139.
Which is kind of the marquee prop on the ballot. That's the abortion initiative or proposition.
It is. And the Legislative Council used the phrase unborn human being in the description.
Yes.
And the opponents of that phrase said that it is biased, it's not impartial, and it's not fair. And so they got a judge to agree, and the judge essentially ordered that that phrase be taken out of the description. There's another word that could substitute, and that word is fetus. Mm-hmm. It's believed that unborn human being is not impartial because it suggests that the fetus, right, is a human being perhaps able to survive outside of the womb. And the opponents were successful in that case. Now, just because the trial judge agreed doesn't mean that that's the final say. Mm-hmm. So this is now on appeal to the Arizona Supreme Court. I don't believe a date has yet been set for a hearing, but it's going to be decided by the Supreme Court, and whatever the Supreme Court decides, of course, will be the final say.
And the Attorney General, Chris Mays, who will be my guest tomorrow for our Friday Focus interview, was weighing in on not only that proposition, but another one dealing with elections.
Right. So there is a proposition, which it's basically a citizens' initiative, right, where the citizens have collected the requisite number of signatures on the petition. And under this initiative, the state of Arizona would essentially have open primaries.
Right.
Right now, that's not how the primaries work. Under Prop 140, partisan primaries would be eliminated. I tend to think of this in my own small mind as a free-for-all.
Yeah.
So you would have any number of candidates and citizens of any party affiliation. And
they'd all be on the ballot under mm-hmm. under one heading.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
That's right.
So it's a free-for-all, like you say.
Well,
so
okay.
is it the top five vote-getters advance, or how does that work?
See,
it's
that's
confusing.
That's yet to be determined. What the measure essentially does is eliminate partisan primaries and replace them with a system where individuals may vote for the candidate of their choice, regardless of party affiliation of the voter or the candidate, right? So thus the free-for-all. The problem that the Attorney General has with, again, the Legislative Council description is that it refers to voter ranking, right? So what that means is the description of the ballot measure focuses on one part of it that may be the most objectionable part. And the voter ranking goes to the point you were making, which is that the legislature may have the top five vote getters in the primary go on to the general election. And if that happens, then the winner would be chosen through a system where voters rank their choices in order, a process that could require multiple steps until one person
emerged.
It gets
kind of complicated.
It does get kind of complicated.
Really, yeah.
Now, compare that against Proposition 133, which is a legislative referral. Under Prop 133, which has already been certified for the ballot, it would require partisan primary elections for partisan offices and essentially constitutionally enshrine a ban on open primaries.
Interesting.
So on
this
the one,
is kind of the countermeasure.
Exactly. On the one hand, you have a Republican-controlled legislature that has referred a measure that would constitutionally ban open primaries. And on the other hand, you have a citizens' initiative in the form of Prop 140, which would eliminate partisan primaries.
Well, what if they both pass?
Good question.
So then what?
Well, then I think we have to ask the voters if they were actually reading the props.
Whoa. Yeah, and there. Is it Alaska and maybe California? Do the couple of states do this ranking system, don't they?
Not familiar with other states, but historically in Arizona, we have not done that.
No.
We have had partisan primaries since as long as I can remember, and perhaps since the beginning of voting. But there is a proposition on the ballot which could change that and essentially amend our state constitution to require open primaries.
Hmm. Are you saying there's three measures on the ballot then?
Nope.
No, just the two. There's just the two.
133 and 140.
Okay, 133, 140. All right. Oh, lots to cover. Glad we have Don Luce for another segment. Let's take the break right here. When we come back with Attorney Luce, where's the very controversial border measure that may or may not be on the ballot? We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare.
Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's an easy sell when I talk about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico this time of year, especially as we're coming up on the weekend. Great weekend to get away. The Gila National Wilderness, which is right at the doorstep of Silver City in southeastern New Mexico, southwestern New Mexico. Looks so good. It's all greened up. Great place to go hiking. Only about a three-hour drive, and here's the easy part to sell. It's cooler over there. 10 to 15 degrees cooler. Their midday temperature, upper 80s. We will take that any day over in Silver City. SouthwestNewMexico.org is their website. Don Luce is with us for his monthly visit, an expanded visit, because we have so much to talk about with the initiatives and propositions and the measures and on the ballot. And there could be, what, Don, 14?
14.
Let's circle back to the one Proposition 139, the abortion measure. There's another legal challenge to this, correct?
There is. So in addition to a dispute over the description of the measure as fashioned by the Legislative Council, there's also a challenge to the measure itself. And this is being brought by Arizona Right to Life. They refiled a prior lawsuit that alleges that Prop 139, which is the Abortion Access Act amendment, is legally flawed. And by the way, before we get to that, I just wanted to point out that this measure garnered about 820,000 signatures on the petition. So
that may be a record.
Nearly a million signatures on the petition. Yeah, that's huge. There are only about 5 million voters registered in the state.
Yeah.
So anyway, the dispute is, again, in Maricopa County Superior Court. And the plaintiff in the suit, Arizona Right to Life, is contending that the measure and the summary of the measure were misleading. They say that there are parts of the measure that allow abortion past the point of viability. In other words, exceptions that weren't clearly explained. And they're contending that it is so misleading that it would create a significant danger of confusion or unfairness, which is the test, the standard. Now, they contend it's misleading in several respects, but they primarily say that there is an unfettered right to obtain an abortion up to birth. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but they point to an exception for mental health, which they say is so broadly defined that almost nothing is prohibited. So again, you're seeing groups that oppose the various subjects of these ballot measures going to court to try to get a judge to agree and get the measure taken off of the ballot. Now, this citizens initiative is hugely popular if you judge it by the number of signatures that were on the petition. So I would suggest that the default position is probably going to be to allow the voters to decide for themselves if they want to enact this constitutional amendment or not. And it's interesting to note that what is happening in Arizona is sort of exactly what the justices in the case of Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization predicted. They, when they ruled in 2022 that Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided and that there is no constitutional right to abortion, they specifically said this is going back to the states. The states are going to decide for themselves what their laws are going to be with respect to abortion. And that is exactly what we're seeing in Arizona. There is a statute that is currently in effect that allows abortion through week 15. And there is a measure that is going to, in all likelihood, be on the November ballot that is going to allow abortion through the point of viability. And there are certain exceptions that would allow it after that point as well. So the voters, in all likelihood, are going to be the final say with respect to what the law is in the state of Arizona. And that's exactly what the justices in the Dobbs decision said was the way we're going to handle this. This is how we're going to create the law. It's not going to be a federal constitutional right. It's going to be decided state by state.
And again, that is Proposition 139, if approved, Don Luce, would enshrine a constitutional right in the state of Arizona to terminate a pregnancy.
Correct.
All right. The other big measure, controversial measure, is the border measure, border initiative. Where does that stand? I guess that's before the Supreme Court, state Supreme Court.
It is. So Prop 314.
314, okay.
Was challenged. And the challenge to Prop 314 was a little bit different than the challenges we've been discussing with regard to the abortion measure and the others. And the challenge was that it contains more than one subject.
Yeah.
Right? That under the Arizona Constitution, any law has to be limited to one subject. You can't have a hodgepodge or a potpourri of various subjects in one law. And the opponent,
and there's legal precedent for that, because we've had measures tossed out because the ruling was that it covered more than one subject.
Exactly. Yeah. And so what the opponents were saying in their legal challenge was that it covers people who cross the border at other than a port of entry. It covers the sale of fentanyl that causes the death of another.
Mm-hmm.
It covers people who are not in this country legally and submit false documents.
It's a laundry list.
Kind of. But what the trial judge in that case said, and that was about a month ago, that this came to the forefront. What the trial judge said was, yeah, they may not be identical, but there's enough of a relationship between the subjects that I'm not going to order it taken off the ballot. So that's the decision that was rendered at the trial level. What's going to happen now is the Supreme Court's going to make the final decision. And that's how these challenges go. They start out in the trial court in Maricopa County, and then generally the party that loses files an appeal to the Arizona Supreme Court, which makes the final decision. And that's exactly what
it is. It's a two-step process normally.
Yep. Well, almost without exception.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So there is the thing, like, time is ticking here. I mean, they've got to finish, wrap this up so the ballot can be printed.
Exactly. So the general election is on November 5th. Today is August 1st.
And early voting's 30 days before that, usually.
So doing the math, the county recorders need to get final decisions on these various challenges so they can get the ballots printed. And also those pamphlets that registered voters get in the mail.
Yeah.
Those have to be printed and mailed also. And those contain the descriptions as prepared by the Legislative Council, which are currently under judicial attack. So that is, those issues need to be resolved as well, so that all of these materials can be printed, disseminated, and voters can actually begin early voting.
We should point out there's minimum wage will be one of the 14 issues to be decided, right?
Well, it's interesting that you should mention that, because that is the third citizen initiative. It's going to, if it passes, it's going to increase the minimum wage in Arizona to $18 per hour.
That's more than most states.
I think it's more than even California.
$18 an hour, okay. But that also is being challenged. Or is it?
Not to my knowledge. Oh. I'm not aware of any litigation involving that citizens' initiative. And quite frankly, it's not as a hot button issue as the others we've been discussing.
No. All right, Don Luce, always a pleasure. Glad we had a little extra time, because a lot to cover. Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Bill.
Don Luce of the law firm Luce Law Group, with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Don is our legal contributor, author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona. Everybody should get their estate planning done. That book, along with the Arizona Law book, in their second printing. All right, on behalf of attorney Don Luce and Tom, engineering and producing our program, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.